Well, have you met durian? You'd probably remember if you did. Durian is not a person, but a fruit. In fact, it's called the king of fruits, according to our guest this morning, Lindsay Gasek. She's a Rogue Valley native, now living and working in Thailand and Malaysia, giving tours of the places where durian grow. And she blogs about this spiky-looking but tasty fruit, too. Lindsay visits us this morning to talk about her first experience with durian and why the fruit has become the focus of her life. When I first saw this story on our production schedule, I said, what? We're going to do a segment about a fruit? So tell me about durian, Lindsay, and exactly what it is, because it's not that common in grocery stores and whatnot on the mainland, although you can get it.
Yeah, you can actually get it at Food for Less now in Medford area. So it is becoming a lot more common. It's one of those things I think that people just haven't really discovered yet, but I definitely think there is a potential in the market because it is a great fruit. It's quite unique. There are a lot of different kinds. They all have different tastes. There's a lot of varieties, just like any other kind of wine or chocolate or coffee or things like that. And so that would be more of the way to think about durian than just a fruit, because it does have a lot more diversity and flavor than something more common like a banana or a pineapple.
So some of us find things that we like in our lives. I love coffee. I love beer. And, you know, consider myself somewhat of a connoisseur of those things. But I haven't ever made it my life's work. So when did you first discover durian, and what about it has caused it to become sort of the center of your life now?
Well, I first discovered durian in 2009, and bizarrely, it was actually here in the Rogue Valley because it is available. And at that time, I was changing my diet to a vegan diet, which meant that I was exploring a lot more foods and types of foods and what my options were. I think that people who are changing their diet tend to be a little bit more open-minded about trying new food. So I was very curious to find out what this thing was when I found out about it, because the stories about durian are just phenomenal. You know, the way that it smells, the way that it's this massive spiky thing that kills people by falling on them out of the trees. I mean, it's got these fantastic stories, and I just really wanted to try one. So I ended up going to the Chinese grocer. There's one next to the Fred Meyer's. I happened to find mine at Eugene because I was going to school there at the time. And so I just wanted to try it, and I thought it was great. I thought it was really tasty and not like anything I had ever tasted before. And I was really curious to go and try it. So I ended up going to the Philippines to try a fresh durian the first time. And it's just a very, very interesting fruit. And so it's one of those things that you can eat it, but you can also think about it a lot.
So you went to the Philippines specifically to try durian fruit, or were you there for another reason?
I was there to meet up with some friends who also were durian lovers, and so they were the ones who introduced me to trying it fresh. But I already went there knowing that I liked it, and I was excited to try it fresh. And there is quite a big difference in how it tastes, whether it's fresh or frozen. Mostly has to do with the variety that they send here to the United States. Of course, there are export varieties there as well. You know, like there's a Cavendish banana or there's a Fuji apple or something like that. Their main export variety is called Montong. It grows in Thailand. And unfortunately, it doesn't freeze super well, so the texture tends to be pretty off by the time people thaw it.
So can you tell us anything about the natural history of durian fruit? I mean, clearly it's a cultivated crop now, but where did it originate?
It appears to have originated on the Indian subcontinent before India, like, slammed into the rest of Asia. So you can see that there was pollen from that time, but since then it has migrated down to the Borneo area. And so it went extinct in the Indian subcontinent, but there's still, like, relatives. There's some really weird fruits up there that are, like, old durian varieties that are poisonous, actually. But very spiky and big. But then most of the varieties that we know of today, there's about 27 species. And they all come from the Borneo or Malaysian Peninsula area.
So durian fruit obviously has this spiky and, as you say, deadly exterior and this fruity interior. How do you actually eat it?
Well, it's very soft inside. That's one of the most interesting things about it, is it has this very great contrast between the outside, which is so spiny that you really will hurt yourself. Like, I have holes in my pants right here from accidentally nicking my pants on the spines and ripping them. And I get, during the season, my hands get all messed up from opening them. But the inside is like a custard. It's very, very soft. And how soft it is depends both on the variety and also on when it's harvested. because you can harvest it at different levels of maturity and it'll have different levels of firmness. So different people have different preferences for when it's harvested and also the variety type, because sometimes it can be so soft it's like a soup, and sometimes it can be pretty firm and crunchy. And so one of the ways that you eat it is usually just with your hands. And so there's, you sort of see these two different divisions between the people who are like real durian lovers and who can just get in there with their hands and they get it all over themselves. And then the people who are like kind of fussy, you know, and they either use like gloves or like a knife and a spoon or something like that. And, you know, they're a little bit more prissy about it, but it's fun.
So if you Google durian fruit, as I did earlier this week, what comes up are a lot of pretty colorful quotes about the smell. I understand that if you eat a durian fruit on the subways in Singapore, you get a $500 fine. Mm. And there are some quotes that I could bring into the program now, but it's between 8 and 8:30 on a Friday morning, and I'm not going to do that. Plus, this is public radio. But can you describe the smell?
So the misconception about durian smell is that it doesn't actually smell bad like that. So there's what most people are describing in the smell that you'll smell like wafting around when you walk down a street is actually the durian shells rotting in the tropical sun, which doesn't smell nice. But no fruit smells nice when it's rotting. So durians do have a very, very short shelf life. Most durians are bad by the time they're about 2 days old. So they can't be off the tree very long, and that's when they start to be sour and develop that smell, and then you don't really want to eat them. I don't really want to eat them. What they smell like when they first fall off the tree is a bit like cut grass with sort of this very intense gassy aroma. They can also smell sweet. They can also smell bitter. I can actually tell the difference between different varieties just by the aroma. And so I kind of feel like these very fun but very over-the-top descriptions of the smell is something that you find more in the Western media, and I feel like that's something that people are just sort of repeating. Like, this is just fun. This is great. Like, we have this ridiculous way of describing it, so let's just keep going.
Right.
And I don't feel that people who actually go to Asia and eat it find it that it smells like that. Yeah.
So I'm thinking about kiwi fruit, for example, which made the leap from New Zealand to North America pretty well. In fact, there are varieties now that people who live in warmer climates can grow in their own gardens in the U.S. Is that ever going to be the case with durian fruit?
No, it's too tropical. So kiwi is actually from China, and it's actually a cold weather fruit. So you do have like some of the smaller kiwi berries and stuff here. But durian is very, very intensely tropical. It doesn't do well in low humidity. It needs about 80% humidity. So even someplace like California is going to be too dry for durians. So they are pretty restricted.
But you can't grow it in Hawaii.
Yes, they're doing very well in Hawaii. But even Florida, no one's managed to successfully grow one. But yeah, if you want a fresh durian, you can go to Hawaii. And they have a weird thing with the microclimate. So they have durian almost all year there, which is pretty cool.
Now, your passion for durian has actually become a major part of your life, and now you're blogging about it. You're doing tours for people who want to sample different kinds of durian. Tell us about that.
It's a pretty weird thing to get into. It's not something I really ever expected to do with my life, but it was just sort of, I started this blog on this trip. So when I graduated from college, I happened to graduate during the recession, and I was having a really hard time finding a job. So my dad was the one who suggested I take a gap year and go travel and get some life experience. And so I did that. But I didn't really want to do just a normal trip like a tourist. I wanted to like focus on something. And I was really interested in tropical agriculture. And of course, I was interested in this weird thing called the durian. So I thought, well, I'll just like learn everything I can about it. And it'll be a great way to meet people because I'll have to go talk to farmers and I'll have to like go to these random places, you know, because durian tends to grow in the rural areas, so you tend to get really off the beaten track. So you don't really go to the normal tourist area. So it was a very, very interesting year. But I decided to start a blog to just keep track of what was happening with, my photographs and, just to remember it and to share with my family. But then what happened is that I checked my analytics and there were like actually other people reading my blog. And then I started getting emails like, hey, can you help me? I want to go here. I want to go there. Can you tell me how to get to this kind of durian? A lot of people out in the world. And so I started finding this community of durian lovers. And I guess it's like coffee lovers or chocolate lovers. There's people who are very, very passionate about it. And they all started reaching out to me. And I just started learning more and more. And I guess I became, I don't know if I could call myself an expert, but it's definitely where I spend most of my time. And so I focus a lot on helping people to travel to eat it. Yeah.
The topic is durian fruit, and somebody with a distinct passion for durian fruit this morning here on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join the conversation. Maybe you have some questions about this, for us, exotic fruit. You can call us by phone anywhere in the state of Jefferson, 800-838-3760, or send us an email. The email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Our guest is Lindsay Gasick talking about durian fruit. So, I get the sense that this enthusiasm, your blogging, your activities, give you a good excuse to travel around Asia in pursuit of really rare varieties of durian. You alluded yes. to that. Is there sort of a holy grail of durian fruit for connoisseurs?
There's a few very popular varieties. You know, everyone's got one that they're hunting for, and I always have a list that I'm hunting for. My current goal is I'm trying to collect every kind of durian that is registered with the Department of Agriculture in Malaysia. So they have a list of 134 varieties. I'm also searching for the ones in Thailand. That's a little more challenging because there's 234. And so I'm about halfway done in Malaysia, and I've got about maybe a third of them done in Thailand. But you can find them on my blog. I take pictures, and then I upload them so people can see the different varieties, the taste, where I found them. So if they want to go back and find them themselves, they can do that. And then also you can actually identify the way a durian looks from the outside. You can identify the different varieties by the spike type, the way the bottom is shaped, and other things about the outside of it. And so I do create like field guides and identification guides because you'll find with the popular varieties especially that there's a lot of tricksters happening. There's a lot of scams, especially with the varieties that are worth a lot of money like Musang King or Blackthorn or Red Prawn or these varieties that are very expensive. So that's one thing you have to remember about durian is it's quite an expensive fruit and people spend a lot of money on it. And so there's definitely like kind of a black market or a market where people are trying to trick you. And so that's one of the things that I do for helping people is create these field guides so that you cannot be tricked. And I wrote a book, actually, and I was carrying my own book around Singapore. And it was really, really great because I would walk into a durian stall and they would try to sell me the wrong variety for this outrageous price. And I would just whip my book out, pop open the page and be like, that's a Blackthorn. And then you could just see them just like melt. It was great. It was so funny. So I definitely know that, you know, the book was helping me. It definitely would be helping my followers as well.
So are the scams typically aimed at Westerners who are traveling in in Asia for the purpose of checking out durian fruit? Or are Asian, Malaysians, Thai people scammed as well by sellers?
Chinese are really into durian. And so we're seeing a super influx in like the last 3 or 4 years of Chinese tourists. And they don't really know anything about durian. So they're very easy to get scammed. And they also have money. So the Chinese tourists that we're seeing are usually the new rich, so they don't really mind spending insane amounts of money. But yeah, as foreigners, as white Westerners, we're sort of walking targets to be scammed for durian because they actually, because I guess maybe our media, they believe that Westerners do not like durian. Like one of the most common conversations I have is like, oh my God, you're a Westerner. How are you eating durian? Like Westerners don't like durian, fear factor, on and on, you know, and it actually gets quite boring for me. Because it happens so often. But it's something you have to be aware of that as a Westerner, when you walk up to a durian stall, they're going to look at you and be like, it's not worth wasting my good fruit on this person because they're not going to like it anyway. I'm just going to give you the worst thing I have and see if you notice. And so a lot of people I talk to, when I talk to them about, you know, they tried durian, they thought it was awful. And I'm like, well, what did it look like? You know, what kind was it? How old was it? Was the shell cracking? And they're like, yes, yes, yes. And I'm like, that was disgusting. Like, I would never eat that. Like, that guy just gave you his waste product, basically.
Okay. Well, I'm going to – Lindsay Gasick brought me some freeze-dried durian here. We didn't get a fresh one because we didn't get cleared for the expense of the fruit in time. But I'm going to try it. This Westerner will try a piece here live on the radio. And so what variety is this?
This is Montong. It comes from Thailand. I actually have been to the factory that makes this.
So the most popular kind to be exported to the U.S.
About 90% of durians in Thailand are Montong. And up until about 2 years ago, it was the only variety available in the United States.
Wow, that's really good. It's got a very mild flavor.
Yes.
And it's almost the flavor notes are almost kind of halfway between a fruit and a vegetable.
Yeah, it's a bit, it's vanilla-y, but it also has a little bit of a sulfur to it.
Yeah, yeah. So I've read, speaking of sulfur, that the high sulfur content of this fruit can cause people problems if they drink alcohol with it. Is that true?
You know, I actually did a study where I had people, I took two groups of people, and I had one of them drink beer and eat durian together, and the other one just eat durian, and then we actually measured blood pressure and our temperatures, and we didn't see any differences. So the only way that we know of that it could actually affect you is because there is an enzyme blocker in durian, and it happens to be the same enzyme that I think Asian people are lower in already because of their genetics, and that means that you don't move alcohol out of your blood as quickly. So you could just get more drunk if you eat durian and drink at the same time.
Lindsay Gasick is our guest this morning, and she's talking about her lifelong passion for durian fruit. And we just have about 30 seconds left, so tell us about where people can find your blog and also your book.
So my blog is called Year of the Durian. It's a reference to that first year because I thought it was going to be just 1 year of durian and then I would go home and have a normal life. But apparently I keep going. So yearofthedurian.com, and my book is available on the website. I'm also at Instagram, @durianwriter, and that's the best way to get in touch with me.
Lindsay Gasick, thanks for spending your time with us this morning on the Jefferson Exchange and for bringing me some delicious durian fruit.
I'm glad you liked it. All right.